Today, we're looking at a stack of source material that suggests the next jump, which is 6G isn't just about speed. It's not just downloading a movie in 1 second instead of 10. We're talking about a fundamental shift in what a wireless network actually is.
That's the core of it, really. If you look at the history of mobile networks from 1G all the way up to 5G, it's always been strictly about moving data. You know, how much, how fast. But the research we're covering today suggests 6G is where the network essentially opens its eyes.
It opens its eyes.
Literally. Our mission today is to unpack a concept called ISIC. That stands for Integrated Sensing and Communications. The whole idea is that the exact same radio waves carrying your emails and your videos will simultaneously act as a radar system. It'll physically map the world around you.
So my router at home basically becomes a radar station.
Essentially, yes. We're looking at a target implementation around 2030, where communication and sensing, actually seeing the environment, are fused into one single hardware platform. Instead of having separate systems for radar and data, it's all one thing.
Okay, that sounds incredible, but let's ground this in reality for everyone listening. How do we actually get there? Because from what I read in the sources, we can't just use the same old radio frequencies we're using right now. We have to go somewhere totally new on the spectrum.
We do. We have to go way, way up. Current 5G technology, the really fast stuff, tops out at what we call millimeter wave frequencies.
Right.
But for 6G, to hit the goals they've set, and these goals are wild, we're talking data rates over 100 gigabits per second.
Over 100.
Over 100.
Yeah.
And latency under 1 millisecond with reliability greater than 99.999%. To do all that, we have to move into the terahertz band.
The terahertz band. I mean, it sounds like something out of a sci-fi movie, but what does that actually mean in terms of physics?
It's basically the wild west of the spectrum. We are talking about frequencies from 0.1 to 10 terahertz. This sits right in the middle between microwaves, which we use all the time, and infrared light.
So it's almost light.
Exactly. It's this weird no man's land between electronics and photonics. And because of that, the standard rules of radio just completely change.
I noticed that in the reading. It felt like every time the engineers tried to apply standard 5G rules to terahertz, the physics of it just slapped them in the face.
Oh, it's a deeply hostile environment. And the biggest bully on the playground up there is just the atmosphere itself, specifically water vapor.
Wait, like humidity?
Just simple moisture in the air. At terahertz frequencies, water molecules get very excited. They start to resonate. And when they resonate, they literally absorb the signal's energy.
Wow.
So unlike your current cell signal, which just blasts through the air without much trouble, a terahertz signal gets physically eaten by the atmosphere.
So if I'm out in a jungle, or just on a humid summer day in Florida, 6G just doesn't work.
It means the range is severely limited. But it's even weirder than that because the absorption isn't uniform across the board. It creates these things the researchers call transmission windows.
Transmission windows.
Right. Imagine the spectrum isn't a wide open highway anymore. Instead, it's a series of tunnels, and they're separated by giant mountains.
Mountains of absorption.
Exactly. You might have a perfectly clear channel at one specific frequency, but if you go just a little bit higher, you hit a peak where the moisture just kills the signal instantly. These windows might be tens of hundreds of gigahertz wide, separated by these dead zones.
Okay, that makes sense.
And here's the real kicker. Mm. The bandwidth actually shrinks the further the signal travels.
Wait, how does bandwidth shrink over distance? I always thought bandwidth was just a fixed pipe.
Usually it is, but think of it this way. At 1 meter away from the transmitter, your signal is strong enough to punch through some of those softer absorption peaks on the edges of the window. So at 1 meter, you might have a massive window open to you, say, from 0.55 to 0.75 terahertz. But at 10 meters away,
the signal gets weaker.
The signal gets weaker, the absorption wins out, and the outer edges of your window literally get eaten away. So at 10 meters, you might only be left with a window from 0.6 to 0.7 terahertz.
That is bizarre. So the air itself acts like a physical filter, and that filter gets thicker the further away you get.
That's a perfect way to describe it. And that leads to the single biggest headache in terahertz technology, which is path loss.
Right, the path loss.
Because the frequency is so incredibly high and the atmospheric absorption is so aggressive, the signal suffers massive loss over very short distances. The research points out that at 0.6 terahertz, you see about 120 decibels of loss over just 100 meters.
120 decibels sounds like a big number, but give us some context for that.
It's catastrophic. Because decibels are logarithmic, right?
Hmm.
So 120 decibels of loss is like screaming at the absolute top of your lungs, and someone standing just 3 feet away can barely hear a whisper.
You just can't broadcast this stuff.
You absolutely cannot. If you put a terahertz antenna in a room and broadcast in all directions like a normal Wi-Fi router, the signal would dissipate into nothing before it even reached the walls.
So how do you fix it? You have to aim it.
You have to snipe. You stop shouting in all directions, and you start whispering directly into a very specific ear. We call this pencil beam technology.
Pencil beam.
Right. To fight this insane path loss, you need what they call ultra-massive antenna arrays. We're talking thousands of tiny antennas, all working together to shoot an extremely narrow, tightly focused beam of data.
Okay, so we're shooting these laser-like pencil beams around the room to overcome the loss. But this is actually where I got really stuck in the source material. There was this whole section on a phenomenon called beam split.
Ah, yes, the beam split.
It sounded like an absolute nightmare for the engineers. I mean, I know in 5G they have an issue called beam squint, where frequencies drift a tiny bit. But this sounded totally different. Why does the beam physically split apart?
It happens because the bandwidth we're trying to use is just too wide. Remember, in the terahertz band, to get those 100 gigabit speeds, you need to use a massive, ultra-wide chunk of the spectrum.
Right.
But a data signal isn't just one single frequency, it's a range. You have the lower frequencies carrying some of the data, and the higher frequencies carrying the rest.
Okay, so my download is riding on this whole wide range.
Exactly. Now, think of a glass prism. If you shine a beam of white light into a prism, what happens?
It breaks apart into a rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
The red light bends one way, the blue light bends another.
That is exactly what happens to a wideband data beam in terahertz. The antenna array itself acts like a physical prism. Because the frequency range is so huge, the lower frequencies literally point in a different physical direction than the higher frequencies when they leave the antenna.
So the low part of my data goes left and the high part goes right.
And your phone is sitting right in the middle, catching absolutely nothing. They don't overlap at all.
That seems like a fatal flaw for the whole concept.
It's a huge problem. The source material quantified this. They noted that at 0.3 terahertz, the split between the frequencies can be around 4 degrees.
4 degrees doesn't sound like a lot.
It doesn't. But remember, we are relying on pencil beams to survive the path loss.
Oh, right. The beam is razor thin.
Exactly. If a razor thin beam splits by 4 degrees, it completely misses the target. The low frequencies hit the ceiling, the high frequencies hit the floor, and you get zero data.
And I imagine this completely destroys the sensing part of ISAC too, right? If you're trying to use this single beam as a precise radar to track, say, a car, and your beam splits into multiple directions,
you end up with a blurred image. You have no idea where the car actually is. It's like trying to thread a needle while wearing someone else's glasses.
Wow.
So engineers have to design these incredibly complex hardware and software systems to compensate for that split. They basically have to find a way to put the rainbow back together before it reaches you.
It's honestly amazing that anyone is trying to build this for mass adoption when the fundamental physics are fighting back this hard.
It is an uphill battle.
But then, just when I thought the physics were entirely bad news, the research introduced the near-field effect, which honestly blew my mind.
Yes, the near-field revolution. This is probably the most fascinating part of the transition to 6G because it actually takes a physics problem and turns it into an advantage.
So help me out here, because normally when I hear near-field, I just think of NFC, like tapping my credit card to pay for a coffee, where it only works if you're an inch away.
Right. That's magnetic near field. This is electromagnetic near field, which behaves differently. In traditional radio engineering, like for 4G or 5G, we assume that once you are a few meters away from an antenna, the radio waves flatten out. We call them plane waves.
Plane waves. Like a flat plane.
Exactly. It makes the math a lot easier to manage. You can picture it like a straight wall of water moving towards you. It hits everything in its path at exactly the same time.
Okay, I can picture that.
But that assumption of flat waves only works when you are considered mathematically far away relative to the size of the antenna and the frequency of the wave.
And in 6G, the antennas are these massive arrays, and the frequency is extremely high.
Right. Because of those two factors, the mathematical definition of what counts as near field extends drastically outward.
How drastic? Yeah. Like a few extra feet?
Try 40 meters.
40 meters? That's like a whole building.
It is. The research notes that at 60 gigahertz, which is standard 5G millimeter wave, the near field is only about 4 meters. But at 0.6 terahertz, the near field expands to approximately 40 meters.
So basically, everywhere you go indoors, you are in the near field.
Almost always. And here's why that is a game changer. In the near field, the waves haven't flattened out into a wall yet. They are still spherical. They are curved.
Why is a curved wave better than a flat one?
Because a curved wave allows you to focus on a specific distance. Think about a standard flashlight versus a magnifying glass in the sun. Standard beam forming is like a flashlight. You point it north, and it illuminates everything in that north direction. But with spherical waves in the near field, you have a magnifying glass. You don't just point it north. You can focus all the energy on a precise point in three-dimensional space, say 30 degrees north and exactly 15 meters away.
So you're adding a depth coordinate to the signal.
Precisely. We gain an entirely new degree of freedom. We can now focus beams on a specific range, not just a specific angle.
That is wild. So it can beam the data directly to my laptop on the desk and completely ignore my smart TV sitting 5 feet directly behind the laptop because they're at different ranges.
Exactly, which massively reduces interference. And for the sensing side, the ISAT concept, it's monumental. If the network can focus on a specific range with a pencil beam, it can map the physical environment with sub-millimeter accuracy.
Sub-millimeter accuracy. That's incredible. So, okay, we've got pencil beams, we're fighting beam split, and we're using spherical waves to target depth. The physics are sorted. But how do we physically build this? The source material threw a lot of heavy acronyms into the hardware section, like RCC and DFRC.
Yeah, engineers love their acronyms. Let's strip those down. RCC stands for Radar Communications Coexistence.
Coexistence.
Right. That's the messy version where you have two totally separate systems, a radar and a radio. Just try not to talk over each other. It's inefficient.
And the other one?
DFRC. Dual Functional Radar Communications. That is the holy grail. One single waveform broadcast from one single set of hardware, doing both jobs flawlessly at the exact same time.
Okay, so DFRC is the goal. What's stopping us from just building that right now?
Power consumption. It always comes down to energy. Think back to those ultra-massive arrays, thousands of tiny antennas. In a perfect, unlimited budget world, you would wire a dedicated processor to every single one of those antennas to get maximum perfect control.
They call that a fully connected array, right?
Exactly, an FEA.
Yeah.
But it is an absolute energy nightmare. If you build a fully connected array at these frequencies, the power drain is so extreme that your base station would probably melt. The energy costs alone make it completely commercially impossible.
So what's the compromise? How do they build it without melting the grid?
Grouping. The paper details an architecture called Array of Subarrays, or Group of Subarrays, AOSA and GOSA.
Grouping them together. Like, instead of controlling every individual light bulb in a stadium, you just wire them into banks and control a whole section at once.
That's a brilliant analogy. You lose a tiny fraction of that hyper-fine-grained control, but the power savings are astronomical. The research showed that at 0.3 terahertz, a group of Subarrays architecture consumes about 200 times less power than a fully connected array.
200 times less. That's the difference between a cool lab experiment and an actual product we can buy.
Exactly. It makes the technology feasible for the real world. And to push it even further, we are seeing entirely new materials come into play to help with this. Things like graphene.
Yes, I wanted to ask about that. The paper mentioned plasmonic nano antennas made out of graphene, which sounds incredibly futuristic.
It sounds like Star Trek, but it's real. These graphene antennas are actually tunable at the material level.
What does that mean?
Normally, to steer a radar beam, you need complex electronics or physical movement. With graphene, you can actually change the direction the beam points simply by altering the energy levels, the voltage applied to the material itself.
So the physical material of the antenna bends the beam for you.
Yes, which saves even more power and processing overhead.
Okay, so the hardware is getting smarter, which brings me to the actual environment. We've talked about how fragile these terahertz beams are, how water eats them. So what happens inside my house? If the router is shooting a pencil beam at my phone and someone walks between me and the router, does the internet just cut out?
In a basic, simple setup, yes. A human body is basically a giant bag of water. You are the ultimate blockage. The beam hits you and dies.
Well, how is this ever going to work? We can't ask people to sit perfectly still to use the internet.
We install smart mirrors.
Mirrors
mm-hmm.
for radio waves.
They're called intelligent reflecting surfaces, or IRS. Imagine a panel on your living room wall, or even integrated into the wallpaper made of metamaterials. This panel doesn't just reflect the beam randomly like a regular mirror reflects light. It is actively controlled. It can catch a terahertz beam and instantly bounce it in a highly specific, calculated direction.
So if my partner walks in front of the router instantly realizes the direct line is blocked, shoots the beam at the wall panel instead, and the wall banks it around them to my phone.
What a high-speed game of billiards. Yeah. Yes. In fact, the source material analyzed a double IRS setup where the signal is bounced off two separate smart surfaces to navigate around very complex obstacles.
And does that actually work without degrading the signal to nothing?
It works remarkably well. They found that a double IRS setup provided about 4 decibels of extra gain for both the radar sensing and the communication link.
That's fascinating. But wait, the math required to calculate that on the fly, you're telling a rider to sense a blockage, find wall A, calculate the angle to wall B, and hit a moving phone in a fraction of a millisecond.
It is incredibly difficult. For standard algorithms running on standard processors, it's practically too slow. The optimization problems involved are what mathematicians call nonlinear and non-convex.
Basically, a mathematical nightmare.
And a total mess.
So let me guess the solution. Machine learning.
Machine learning. AI is the only way to manage that level of dynamic complexity in real time. The network essentially has to learn the physical layout of your environment. But implementing AI creates its own massive problem here.
Which is what?
Data overload. If every single device in your house is constantly sending all its raw sub-millimeter radar data up to a central cloud server to train the AI, you completely clog the network.
Oh, right. You'd use up all that 100 gigabit bandwidth just talking about the environment instead of actually streaming your movie.
Exactly. The communication overhead would crush the system. So the solution they propose is something called federated learning.
Federated learning. I've heard the term, but how does it apply here?
Instead of sending all that heavy raw radar data up to the cloud, the learning happens locally. Your phone or your car or your router trains the AI model right there on its own internal chip.
Okay.
And then it only sends the small compressed updates, essentially just the homework answers, back to the central server. The raw data never leaves the device.
And that saves bandwidth.
Massively. The research highlights that federated learning has about 12 times lower communication overhead compared to centralized learning.
12 times lower. And I suppose that's better for privacy, too, if the raw maps of my living room aren't being uploaded to a server somewhere.
Theoretically, yes. It keeps the raw data local.
Well, let's pull on that thread, because we built this amazing picture of 6G. We've got pencil beams, smart bouncing mirrors, and local AI tracking us with sub-millimeter precision so we can get gigabit internet. But what happens when we take this incredibly precise, fragile system out of a living room and put it on a highway?
Vehicular applications. That is arguably the most difficult use case for ISAC. High-speed movement is the enemy of terahertz waves.
Because of the Doppler effect.
Right. Everyone knows the Doppler effect from audio. An ambulance drives past you and the pitch of the siren goes from high to low.
Right.
The exact same physical shift happens to radio waves when a receiver is moving fast, but at terahertz frequencies, the Doppler shift is amplified aggressively.
How much worse is it compared to what we have now?
It's extreme. The research specifically states that at 0.3 terahertz, the Doppler shift is 10 times worse than it is at standard 30 gigahertz 5G frequencies.
10 times worse. So if I'm in a self-driving car doing 75 miles an hour down the highway?
The frequency shift is so severe that the receiver gets completely confused. It physically destroys what engineers call the orthogonality of the data carriers.
Which means what in plain English?
It means that the standard way we packed data system called OFDM breaks down. The zeros and ones basically get smeared together by the speed.
So the faster I go, the harder it is for the network to lock on to me.
Exactly. And this introduces a fundamental tension at the heart of the entire ISAC concept. You have two systems fighting for control. A radar needs to scan. It wants to sweep its beam back and forth rapidly to see everything in the environment.
Right, to find the obstacle.
But the communications side needs stability. It wants to lock a beam directly onto your antenna and hold it perfectly still to deliver the data.
You can't sweep and hold steady at the exact same time.
You can't. You have to make a trade-off. Engineers manage this using a mathematical tuning parameter. You can think of it like a slider knob on a mixing board.
Okay.
The slider goes from 0 to 1. 0 means the system is purely acting as a sensor. 1 means it is purely acting as a communicator.
So the system has to constantly slide that knob back and forth.
Millisecond by millisecond, adjusting to whatever the environment demands.
Which brings me to the final thought I want to explore here. Because we're talking about autonomous aerial vehicles, drones, self-driving cars, all relying on this network to navigate and communicate.
For them, it's a massive win. A drone doesn't want to carry the weight of a heavy radar system and a heavy radio system. If one 6G chip does both, that saves weight and battery.
Sure. For a drone, it's a perfect solution. But let's talk about us, human beings walking around with phones.
Go on.
We've established that for these terahertz physics to actually work to overcome the massive 120 decibel path loss, to avoid the beam split, to utilize the near field depth, the network physically needs to know exactly where I am at all times.
It does.
Not just, oh, you are somewhere in this building. It needs to know you are seated on the couch, your head is at this exact elevation, and you are 30 degrees north.
Correct. The ultra-massive beamforming absolutely requires that level of millimeter precision.
And it's getting that precision by actively sensing me. The network is using radar on me.
Yes. The radio signal bouncing off your physical body is what tells the network exactly where to aim the data stream.
So, isn't this basically the end of physical privacy?
That is the enormous looming debate over 6G.
I mean, really think about it. Right now, in 2026, I worry about apps tracking my GPS or cookies tracking my browsing. But this is completely different. This is a real-time, three-dimensional physical map of my literal bodily movements inside my own home, generated just so my Wi-Fi can function.
It is exactly that. If an iSAC network is functioning correctly, it inherently knows if you are walking across the room, sitting down, or even if you've fallen over.
Fallen over.
Yes, there are actually several papers right now proposing using 6G networks for ambient fall detection in elderly care facilities.
I mean, which is great. That's benevolent. It can save lives. But the implication is that the capability to track human bodies like that is just always on.
It has to be. That implies that the sensing part of 6G isn't some optional add-on you can just toggle off in your settings.
Right.
It is fundamentally part of the handshake. You physically cannot have the 100 gigabit data speeds without also having the high-resolution physical sensing. They are chemically bonded together in the waveform.
So if I want to download a movie in 1 second in the year 2030, I implicitly have to consent to being physically radar scanned by my internet provider.
That is the ultimate trade-off of going to terahertz. Now, the engineers will argue that thanks to things like federated learning, those raw, millimeter-accurate images of your living room never actually leave your local router.
But the data exists.
The data exists. And as the history of technology tells us, if highly accurate personal data exists somewhere on a device, someone eventually is going to want access to it.
That is a deeply fascinating and honestly a slightly terrifying place to land. It really seems like we are moving from a world where the internet is just this invisible utility we tap into, to a world where the internet is a physical presence that is actively watching us back.
The air around us literally becomes the sensor.
On that provocative thought, I think we will leave you all to look around and ponder the future of your living room walls. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the source material.
Thanks for having me. Catch you next time.